oil palms in South Africa. This beautiful place in Cape Town, it is the mother city with its beautiful tourism or tourist sites. I'm sure you have been around, you have actually seen how beautiful this mother city is, with the two oceans meeting each other. So before we continue, I would like the members of parliament to introduce themselves here, and from there we'll do likewise with our visitors. Thank you. I will start with myself. I'm Manana Sake. I'm the whip of this portfolio committee on women, children, and people with disabilities.
Good morning, everybody, and good morning, our visitor. I'm Ntumi Maga, member of this committee. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to our country. My name is Sarah Peterson, a member of this committee. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to our country. My name is Connie Diemo, member of the portfolio committee. Thank you.
Morning to everyone. Welcome to our wonderful country. I'm Helen Lemula, member of this committee.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. We are welcoming everywhere in South Africa. My name is Cecilia Ditsendela. I'm from the Northwest Province. I'm a member of this committee. Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Connie Musinani, a member of the committee portfolio.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Grace Seke. I'm from Mpumalanga Province, a member of this of the National Assembly.
My name is Benita Gana. Good morning. I'm a member of the portfolio committee. You are welcome.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Parliament. I'm Liesel Panavarga, and I'm a member of the portfolio committee.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Mary Elizabeth.
Okay, can we get an introduction from our committee?
Good morning, members. My name is Nisa Lomatana. I'm committee secretary of the portfolio committee on women, children, and people with disabilities. Thank you.
My name is Lady Sonobakala. I'm the committee secretary for the portfolio committee on women, children, and people with disabilities. Thank you.
Okay.
Good morning. My name is Crystal Levino. I'm a research secretary.
Mm-hmm. Good morning, honorable members and our distinguished guests. My name is Sinibal Dantukela. I'm a cluster researcher. Thank you.
Hi, good morning, honourable members and the delegation. I'm Tasha Avenus, Research Committee.
Good morning. My name is Nima Khorosi, and I'm a researcher for the Multi-Party Women's Caucus.
Thank you very much. Can you hear from our delegation? I don't know which side you, but...
Mm-hmm. Good morning, everybody. My name is Dr. Naomi Shaban. I'm actually the leader of the delegation, the vice chair of the high-level task force on women, girls, gender equality, and HIV. And I'm also the minister for gender, children, and social development of care.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you very much for the warm welcome. My name is Catherine Sozi. I'm the UNAIDS Country Coordinator for South Africa.
Good morning, honorable members of Parliament, Chief Whip. I think you're the Chief Whip or you're the Whip? The Whip. I'm the Chair of this committee. The Chair of the Chair who is ill. Thank you very much, Chair.
Good morning, everybody, colleagues. My name is Nomgwe Manzini. I work for United Nations Women and I'm the country representative to South Africa, but also the regional director for Southern Africa and member of the task force. Thanks for your welcome.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Tumi Shomwe, Senator in House of Parliament in Netherlands. I chair the Committee for Children, as well as of HIV and AIDS Health, until 9th of them. But anyway, I'm happy to be among members of Parliament. I understand the portfolio system, and I appreciate it. I'm sure I'm going to learn something new today. Appreciate it. With you. Thank you.
Morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Lois Kingadu. I'm the executive director of SAFE. I represent civil society on the high level platform. I have really enjoyed how beautiful Cape Town is. Thank you very much.
Honourable Minister, the ladies and gentlemen, my name is Abel Tuatira from Kenya. I'm accompanied by the Minister from Ministry. Assistant Director working for the Ministry of Gender, Children and Sexual Development, but also coordinating the AIDS program for the country.
I'm Priority from Ethiopia. I'm working for HIV Prevention and the Control Office of Ethiopia. I'm Director for Gender Director. I'm a member of the
Good morning, Honorable Member, Chair. I come from Uganda. I'm a member of the High Level Task Force. I'm the Director General of Uganda AIDS Commission. Thank you. My name is Dr. David Tumura. We have very long names in Uganda. I think David is a better idea than we won't pronounce it.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, Chair, Honourable Members, also to all of Chair. I am Dr. Margaret Anitay of the United Nations Population Fund based in Johannesburg. I'm here representing my principal, Mr. Edwin Hewson, who sends his apologies for not being here, and myself as a member of the technical team of the task force.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Mary Isabel from Madagascar. I am a member for the task force and I represent the civil society.
Anyway, it was the technology. Sorry. Good morning, Honorable. I'm Sylvia Kofi from Butler, representing women living with HIV and AIDS. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair, Honorable Members. My name is Amakove Sande. I'm the Senior Gender Equality Advisor with the UNAIDS Regional Office in Johannesburg, covering Eastern and Southern Africa. I also represent the technical committee that supports the high-level task force as well as the interim secretariat for the task force. Thank you.
Good morning, Afshin. My name is Kensani Mahabate. I'm with the UNAIDS office in Pretoria and I'm the partnership gender and human rights advisor. Thank you.
Good morning, honorable members. Good morning, Minister. My name is Ms. Gisi Sudhusingapi. I am the Chief Director responsible for institutional support and capacity building in the Department for Women, Children, People with Disabilities.
Thank you very much, delegation from the UN. Can we have introductions from other members who are taking the break? So that we all know who is who. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Ali Kuyarshalt. I'm an ex-member of Parliament and I now represent a NGO called Vikele. It works specifically with gender-based violence and also HIV AIDS training workshops.
Good morning. My name is Malato Malepo, Media Support for the Committee.
morning, Honorable Members. My name is Stephanie Mahford. I'm the Chief of Staff of the Ministry of Human Children.
I can't read another. My name is Stephanie Mahford. I'm the Chief of Staff of the Ministry of Women, Children, and Disabilities.
Good morning, Honorable Members. My name is Nonsa Zabengu, working in the Department for Women, Children, and People with Disabilities.
I think everyone has had his or her share. Thank you very much for the introduction. I will switch away start from who we are and what do we stand for here in South Africa. So in a very brief overview, I would say here where you are is the parliament, our national parliament in South Africa. And our parliament is divided into two houses. That is the National Assembly, and that is the National Council of Provinces. Here in this house where we are, it is the National Council of Provinces. What a National Assembly does, it chooses the president of the country, it passes laws, it ensures that the members of the executive perform their work properly, and provides a forum where the representatives of the people can policy, debate issues. The speaker is the head and the spokesperson of the National Assembly. That is the National Assembly on the other side. I'm sure you have taken a tour. You saw the distance. So the National Council of Provinces, this is where we are now, is also involved in the lawmaking process and provides a forum for debate on issues affecting the provinces. Its main focus is to ensure that provincial interests are taken into account in the national space of government. The chairperson of the National Council of Provinces is the head and the spokesperson for the House. Here, the difference is that the National Council actually represents the people directly. It is the one that is linked directly to the people, the community down there. So it is directly involved in the interest of the national sphere, the interest of the people, of the community down there. They actually go more than often to do what we term oversight. Though we do it as a national parliament, we don't do it as often as the National Council of Provinces. That's why we say the National Council of Provinces, as you know that our country is divided into nine provinces. So they actually have space with the nine provinces to hear direct what are the interests or what are the challenges that the people have there. Though the National Council does it, but with the National Council, with the National Parliament, we are all in the House debating the issues from the communities, mm-hmm. making laws in there, while these are more grounded in the communities. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, we have what we term constituency offices, where the communities come to the constituency offices of Parliament, whereby that's where we meet with the communities directly. And we do oversight too. But the National Council of Provinces is the more that is actually going directly to the people. So if, in a very brief way, I will inform you about the Portfolio Committee, what this Portfolio Committee stands for. This Portfolio Committee of ours is divided into three aspects. It's a Portfolio Committee on Women, Children, and People with Disabilities. One might ask, why the Portfolio Committee on Women, Children, and People with Disabilities? If you look at the national plan, the strategic plan of our country, which is say it's a democratic country, we say our focus is to render this country unracial, non-sexist, united, and democratic. And as the UN Convention, the seal says for, that there has to be elimination of any type of discrimination. This is what this country set for, that it should eliminate any type of
discrimination. So we are trying to reinforce this, what the CEO calls for. So that's why we have the secret committee in Parliament, a portfolio committee on women, children, and people with disabilities, because we know they are vulnerable, and these are the people who can be discriminated one way or the other. So that's why we have this committee that is specifically looking at the rights, the human rights of these people, that they should be respected at all times. Mm-hmm. And what we do as a committee, we do oversight. That is, we call all departments to see whether in the departments they promote what we can gender equality. Mm-hmm. I can't, as you speak, you all know what gender equality means. But doesn't talk about physics, but it talks about the potential, opportunities, that you should not be discriminated as well. You are a man or a woman, or you are disabled. We should all be given same opportunities, because we are all human beings and have the potential to develop. So that is what this committee stands for. So we do a oversight. By oversight is that we call each and every department to come and assess this strategic plan, whether they are actually within that is a strategic plan, whether their strategic plan has got a caution, whether their strategic plan, in their strategic plan, they have very something that talks to the respect of the rights of women, children, and people with disabilities. And from there, we do oversight, where I said we go down in our communities and see the NGOs and see other structures where women and children, whether their human rights are respected. So, furthermore, I will just say in brief, because it's no time, but in 2010, as a portfolio committee, we focus on the entities 3, 4, and 5, because these are the ones that talk about the maternal health, child survivor. So what we normally do is that we know that we normally say women, because of their being, or people with disabilities, they are vulnerable and find that they are open to things like rape. Even now, even the children now, they face the same torture like the women. So we focus on things like that. That is where we do the oversight. But you find that we have the Department of Health and we have the Medical Research Council, whereby the Department of Health is the one that is focusing directly on the issue of health. But though we say HIV is not a health entity, it cuts across. So here it's done by the Department of Health, and we normally, at one stage or the other, call the Department of Health to find out what is it that is doing in this regard. And then the MRC, as you know, it's a medical research council. It deals with statistics, and it is from it that the national government tells us whether there's been improved or not. And then from there, then we do oversight where we go to him, and they give statistics too, and we look at the various patients that come to him. Maybe if a child from what age, the child that the children are being sexually abused, we look at a thing. So I think, in short, this is how I can explain who we are, what we stand for. The time is very little, so I've just tried to touch on everything in a very short space of time. Thank you. And I will give it over to you for you to give us an insight as to why are you here, what is it that you expect from us. Thank you. Over to you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just appreciate because of the time limitations, and I want to thank you for having time to receive us. We are in South Africa on the invitation of the Minister for Women, Children, I'm getting confused with the Kenyan one. Women, Children, and People with Disabilities. And
high level task force came into being around 2011 or April after people met in Namibia, and the decision was made that we need to do something because of the high prevalence rates that are there on HIV in the Eastern and Southern Africa. And more so, the people are really affected and infected, mostly are women of the reproductive age. And that became a concern, and that's why we put together this team with government players, which has got membership from ministers, it has membership from government in terms of the civil service, and also it has membership from the civil society, and it has membership from the United Nations, who are our main partners and been working together across all our countries in terms of fighting this kind of HIV and AIDS. This high-level task force is meant to engage governments where people have been able to come out clearly and engage their governments. We are meant to talk to them. We mean to be very candid in what we do. We also mean to, we don't mind being the politically incorrect because this problem is a problem we have to face, and we have to face it head on. If we don't do that, then we get into trouble, and all of us will stay with it. This is most of our member states have done. They've done a lot. Most of South African governments have seen it as done. This is the first mission we're having to one of the member states, and they have done a lot. Yet there is still so much more to be done, and there are some areas that we are interested in. We are interested in the issue of the teenage pregnancy, because if that is not controlled, then certainly HIV and AIDS will be going higher up and higher up. We are interested in issues concerning gender-based violence, the women who are lesbians, and the other people, the transgender, the gays, and what we're facing in some of our countries is a major concern. Where women are concerned, we are seeing issues coming up like rape and all that. We're really interested in that. And this committee is going to play a very, very important role. And I don't know whether the membership I've seen here is what really reflects now to the membership, because I'm seeing more women than men. We have quite a number. We have not met the one part where our high level of force is concerned. But what I want to say, and I was quite excited when I saw more women, because HIV and AIDS have got more of a woman's face, because it's women who suffer, it's women who, if they are not infected, then they are affected. It's women who have to drop out of school to come and take care of their people. It's women who are there as caregivers. It's women who have got to carry that burden. And more so, it is women who are more infected than men. So I'm glad to see to meet you and share with your committee members, because I do believe that there is a lot that you can do. This committee, I'm sure, can come up with having laws which are going to serve as a deterrent to issues of gender-based violence, more so the issues where there is what is called corrective rape, because these are people who are known, these are people within the society, the community, where these people are attacked, and these people can be identified. The judiciary cannot have anything to do if you do not give them the law to be able to use those laws to deal and punish with the people who are hurting these people. I, having said that, because we do not have a lot of time, I just want to conclude by saying that we know that there is a lot of funding on HIV and AIDS programs in South Africa. The Minister for Finance has put in quite a bit of money. The Minister for Health has also done a lot, and I have seen that my colleague, who is in charge of women, children, and people with disabilities, is engaging the others to come up with ways and means of making sure that they are able to fight this charge together across the board with the other government players. But it is where now she's facing the challenges. That is where we've come in, so that we can be able to engage government to make it easier and better, and be able to fight this big problem that we are facing from Eastern and Southern Africa. I want to ask Lois Kingandu to say a few, make a few remarks because of the time limitations that I have. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. All protocols of the civil society were not very good as protocols, so I apologize in advance. But in view of time, as my team leader has indicated, we are here to support the work that is going on in South Africa, but we are also here to raise issues around areas where we feel that more progress should be taking place. As indicated, particularly around the issue of hate crimes around LGBTI people. We spent the day yesterday talking to lesbians in Kayelita, and we were so touched just to hear that people are afraid to go to the shop, a young person in school is afraid to go to school, because this young person talked to us and said, I know I can die any day, any time. And how can a young person in a country with such a good constitution live in fear like that? And we do feel that a portfolio like yourself can play a critical role in stopping this. We know South Africa has been working on a hate crime legislation, and we are asking you to fast track that legislation so that we can stop people from dying unnecessarily for something that they've been born with, which is not a fault of theirs. The second thing we are also requesting from the task force is the whole issue around gender-based violence, particularly around women and sexual violence, which we know is also a key driver. We are aware that, again, we have been talking about establishing a national council for gender-based violence, and our call to you is, again, to fast-track this process, because it has been on the desk and it's being discussed, and we appreciate that some work is happening. But in order for us to save women and girls and children that we represent, we feel that, again, you can use your position to push more progress in that direction. The third area that we are requesting your support is really around the issue of young people and the issue of adolescent sexuality, the issues of teen pregnancy and HIV. We are aware that more than 60% of our young people have their first sexual intercourse through sexual violence, either through someone they know or during a dating process. And we are concerned that even in the face of all these high rates of teen pregnancies, high levels of HIV, we still have parents, policymakers still debating whether should we provide condoms to young people, should we provide services to young people, and yet we know that this is a problem. So again, we are appealing to you as a committee to really put these three issues on your agenda. And if there's anything that you can move forward, if you can at least move at least one of those issues, we will feel that our visit here was worthwhile. Thank you.
Thank you very much for those closing remarks. I think we are all aware that the issue of gender-based violence, the issue of social offense, the issue of women, children, and people with disabilities, it's worldwide. It affects the whole world. There's no one that can say exempted from this whole thing. And I want to agree with you that as South Africans, we are really ahead in all those. And I forgot to actually make you aware that one of our achievements, the main achievement that we had in this country, is for us as women to have a women ministry that is exclusively working on the issues of women, children, and people with disabilities, whereby we have a Honorable Lulu Kimani as our minister. And more to that, we have a minister, a deputy minister to him, who is working on, who is in charge of people with disability. She's doing very well. You know, the issue of people with disabilities was a little bit backwards, but ever since she came into the department, there is a lot of focus, and we are very happy on what the two women are doing. And over and above, I think I can say, as we speak,
we have legislation that has just passed in cabinet, a bill on the empowerment and gender, which we term empowerment and gender equality bill. It was passed through a cabinet on the 21st of August. There, by the way, aware that we have a lot of legislation which has got to protect women, but we find that there is a little bit sluggish in its implementation. So that the minister came up with this bill, empowerment and gender equality bill, so that you can actually have indicators, you can actually have frameworks, you can actually have levels of punishment that if this law is not, whoever does not comply to this law must be punished one way or the other. And then on the issue of lesbians, I'm sure in this country of ours that is democratic, our constitution covers for everyone. But you know that in a country, Rome was not built in a day.
Mm-hmm.
You have to go portion by portion and portion.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like the lesbians are left out in our country. We are doing something for our lesbians, but as you were saying, that we still have legislation that has got to be passed. It's very true what you are saying, but we are on it. The only thing you know that in the country you have the community and the mindset or the attitude. This seems like lesbians, it's a good thing. So we have to educate. That's why I talk of oversight, where we actually go down to see what is actually happening to the in the interest. So when we meet things like the lesbian who have been abused or something is actually done for them. It's not that they are less bad. But you know that with the people, they expect that things should be done rapidly. But we are there, we are busy. I mean, our constitution does not allow any discrimination of any sort in our country. So that's what those things are actually focusing on. And I think once this empowerment and gender equality legislation comes into being, definitely we'll be able to deal with all those things. But as I said, home was not done in a day. But I think in South Africa, you are not the only ones who have come to us. Many other countries come, and we go out last May. I think we were in Norway, in Oslo, whereby we were actually going to see how they practice gender equality, because we learned that it's one of the best countries. So we interchange views, and we're happy that you are here. Definitely we'll learn more, and I think in future we will visit you to see what it is that you are. But the others are here in South Africa. I'm sure you know, and they witness that what is it that South Africa is doing. And I want to compliment the minister for inviting you to come and meet with us. I think from now onwards we're going to network. And then networks are very good strategy for people to develop. And I wish you all the good, and go about tour our country. And leave something for people out there. Buy an African weight cup, whatever, so that we boost our economy. You know, it's women who are down there who are busy and just doing this job. I thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Kashifa, the center said she has provided some brochures and some books on child rights, women issues, for you to have a clear insight
mm-hmm.
as to what it is that we are doing, because I just touched it on the territory. But I think when you read it, you will get in depth. Thank you.
Thank you. that you would change the document for them? How we were supposed to do them? The profile.
No, I'm not a big mosquito. It doesn't look like. But we can bring this to them.
I'm not sure what I don't know. But you remember we said instead of the PowerPoint, we will give them the 3 pages.
If you look at the performance indicators, many of the indicators speak to quantity, and for example, number of reports, and not necessarily quality. How do we know that, you know, the policies and the reports that they've monitored have changed anything? So there's no plans necessarily to track and monitor the effects of the interventions. So, and that's right through all the different strategies. On page 11 for that section, the questions relate to, for example, the employment equity, while monitoring and evaluation of employment equity, there hasn't been much progress, and what measures will the CDE take to ensure that in the following year that there's completion or at least more progress. There's a mention of a report that was of inadequate quality, that had to be taken to an external source to work with. And the same question then relates to that, and how widespread is the issue of the quality of content? Is there a capacity deficit in the CEE to deal with quality content, or is it just that the work wasn't done properly? And then in reviewing lesson the framework, the commission is unclear on what impact the intervention has had. And the fourth question, after assessment reports of private and public sector organizations are completed, what advocacy work does the CGE engage in with these organizations? So it all speaks to the outcome of the intervention. It's one thing to have an intervention, but how successful was it? And what follow-up measures are in place? For the second strategic objective, if you look on page 15, the questions there. Of the complaints handled by the CGE, how many were resolved due to the CGE's intervention? The first question. Question two, what was the outcome of meetings held with the provincial house of traditional leaders and council of churches? Were these engagements successful? And in what way? Because the report only says that there were meetings held and not necessarily what the outcome of those meetings were. The CGE speaks about alternative distribution channels. So the third question asks them to give examples. There are 36 interventions by provinces mentioned with regards to collaborating with other institutions. Can the CGE give some detail in this regard? And while provinces were sporadically mentioned in the report, there doesn't seem to be a comprehensive report on provincial activities. And given that much of the grassroots activity takes place at provincial level, how does the CGE intend to include these activities in the next report? And just for them to get some outline of their outreach program in the provinces. The last question, what is the nature of the collaborations planned with Chapter 9 institutions and based on what is contained in MOUs and TOFs that were signed, and which Chapter 9 institutions were engaged? For Strategic Objective 3, page 17, there were two questions. How does the CGE intend to use the list of conventions, covenants, and charters to encourage compliance? Because the CGE just says they will compile a list of international conventions. But how do they plan to use that list in order to encourage compliance with those charters? The second question being, what is the outcome of the meeting with DERCO to remove reservations of the African Charter on Human People's Rights, on the rights of women? Because once again, it was just listed, but there's no mention of outcomes. Strategic Objective 4, page 19. Also, just two questions. The 2010-2011 annual report documented that the CGE's communication strategy was complete and is now reporting for 2011-2012 its intention to engage an external service provider to draft the communication strategy. So obviously the question is, why is an external service provider being sought when in fact the strategy was completed? And if it's truly necessary to engage an external service provider, what measures will the CGE take to ensure that they have critical inputs and that the document will remain relevant for the organization's working environment? Question two, with the strategy speaks of, or at least the annual report speaks of meetings with funders, with whom were funding meetings held, and what has been the outcome of those meetings? Moving on to the next section. Human resource management, and that's on page 20. One of the critical things was that the CGE is still spending quite a large chunk of their budget on human resources. The previous financial year was 60%, now it's 67%, so it's going up. And then just breaking it down to the different sections, in terms of personnel salary band, the CGE has listed that it has 41 highly skilled supervision staff, 21 highly skilled workers, and 9 skilled workers. So from this, it's evident that the commission is quite top-heavy. So there's a lot of supervisors and less staff to manage, and that's quite a strange setup. So the first question is, You know, what's the reason for having so many supervisors and how sustainable is a top-heavy organization? And given that CG speaks about opting a human resource strategy, how does that strategy deal with this issue? And if it does, what are the kind of the preliminary interventions planned by the Commission to manage its human resources more adequately? The second question relates to the fact that the Commission lists that for skilled, and highly skilled supervisors, they earn the same average salary. It was quite a strange thing to see. Either they're underpaying at the top or overpaying at the bottom. So just some clarity on why that is and how this impacts on the CGE's competitiveness in attracting the right talent and highly skilled personnel. And then page 21, on personnel costs by program. I think the most concerning thing was that they spend no money on training at all. And of course the question is why was there no training done for staff? And what plans are in place for the following financial year to ensure adequate staff development and improvement? And then at a line item for CEO, it shows that there's two employees. That seems a bit strange. Maybe it's just a typo or there's perhaps a plausible reason. There's some clarity on that. And then on performance-related rewards, on average for senior managers, about 66,000 rand per employee, 41,000 for middle management, and 44,000 on average per employee for other staff. And of course, the question being why is CE spending such excessive amount of performance bonuses? Employment vacancies, just the number of vacancies, the number of posts, and the number of posts sold didn't quite correlate. It would say, for example, that there are five posts under a specific department, that there's one vacancy and there was only three sold. That didn't quite...
Sorry, ma'am. You're left with 3 minutes.
3 minutes, okay. So, yeah, vacancies, and then, of course, it lists that there were no promotions, but in the table it says there's five promotions. There were, on page 22, two employees that had disciplinary action taken against them. The nature of those transgressions and the outcome of the disciplinary action would be interesting. Under IT, on page 22, the CGE states that they need to sort of overhaul the IT infrastructure, and then a question on what are the preliminary costs that would be associated with an upgrade. And then the financial overview, the Commission got a qualified opinion with matters of emphasis. And that section on page 22 just speaks to the different, or not page 22, page 23 rather, the questions under, you know, what the CD will do in order to avoid the massive emphasis in the next financial year, and how does the Commission plan to increase spending on programs while minimizing a rise in human resource spending. And then in conclusion, 55% of the project planned were not implemented, and there are a few cases where information is missing and where there's past repetition. And just in summary, I think there's a need to focus more on performance indicators that speak to quality and not just the quantity of what they've done.
Thank you, ma'am. I'm sorry that I had to make you rush. We are behind time, and this is the same for us. And I want to extend two apologies to the members that during the UN delegation sitting, I could not give you some opportunity to ask questions because time was the next time. Department of Finance.
I think it's supposed to be T-O-R, I guess. Sorry, I think it's supposed to be T-O-R. T-O-R.
What is T-O-R?
Terms of reference.
T-O-R.
Terms of reference. T-O-R.
Is there a... Pardon?
Thank you. There was something that I picked up in the report on court cases and who is liable for that. And the other one was, if disciplinary steps are taken against officials for irregular and wasteful, but if it's fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Did you speak on that one?
No.
I know there is a question listed on the last one, were there disciplinary actions taken for fruitless expenditure, but I don't think I read it, but it is here. I think the other issues on asset management and that's probably the last in that last paragraph of financial overview.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Where's all our
1 second. Oh, they are sitting. Okay, over to you. Katika and Crystal, are you there?
Good morning, Crystal Evanor, these are just good. Good morning, Kasha Ivan, Leadership Committee.
Good morning, I'm Tulema Horosi, I'm a researcher for the Multi-Party Women's Caucus.
Good morning, Tulema Zamtukela.
It's all okay, researcher.
Police Mubani, 33 to the whip.
My name is Malas from Lepco Media Support.
Charlene Valden, Commit Support All. Charlene Sheldon, come with support off.
And honorable members, I'm sorry that I did not introduce to you our cluster research. And I was listening.
Thank you very much, Chair. My name is Tony Bandamigela. I'm the cluster researcher. Thank you very much.
He is about to join us.
Yeah.
Our cluster researcher. Thank you. I'm waiting for you to sit
here
and introduce yourself.
Chairperson, this is one of our commissioners from the Commission for Gender
Equality. Is she going to introduce herself or you do it for you?
No. What I'm saying is we'll introduce ourselves as the commission. It's going to be part of that. Thank you very much, Chaplain, and thanks for inviting us to your committee. I'm Vano Zelishozi, the chairperson for the Commission for Gender Equality. I'm going to hand over to the deputy chair and then go on.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Togo Pumlan. Thank you. Deputy Chair.
No.
Good morning. Sorry for coming late. I was at the TCD hearing. I'm Mr. Amanda Hurst. Commissioner for the Commission on Gender Equality.
My name is Wallace Mbuku, also one commissioner.
Yula Manare, Commissioner.
Good morning, my name is Moshabi Butu, CEO.
It's going on and off. Good morning again, my name is Keke Somaema, CEO for the Commission.
Good morning, my name is Kenneth Baloyi, Office of the Chairperson.
Good morning, my name is Tavo Rappo, Head of Research at the Commission for Gender Equality.
Good morning, honorable members. Commissioner Sylvia Stevens-Mazia.
Good morning, my name is Dr. Claire Kera, Public Education and Information at the Commission for Gender Equality.
Member of media.
Hello.
Good morning, honorable members. I'm Lega Postel Ilani, one of the commissioners.
Good morning, I'm Alice James from the media.
Yeah.
Which is the dead? Thank you. You are welcome, and I would like to give my hearty welcome to the new commission. I think now that you are here, you have come on board, things now will go well in the commission, because it means there will be more commissioners, and I think there will be a huge lot of positive outcomes. And the hurdles that we went through, I think this time we'll jump over them. Hearty welcome. To you, Krishna, I would like to say, as you know, this is the time now of the year where we look at or we revise the budget review. The budget, we normally say this period is what termed the BRRR, which means budget review recommendations and reports. This is the time where we are going to assess your annual reports for financial year 2011-2012, where we are going to look at things like the strategic plan, your APP, your APA, whether your strategic plan is aligned to the APP, and we are going to look at the budget, the appropriation, how did you use your budget, was it any outcome that will show to us that you use your budget effectively and there's actually a value for money. That's all what you're interested in, because we want to see development in fighting against whatever discrimination and whatever crime or whatever. In short, we want to see whether the lives of women have been developed, or we want to see whether their human rights have been protected and promoted. And we want to see whether gender equality is now a reality, and how as the commission, whereby you have to monitor, where you have to evaluate, how have you done your work for the whole year? Will we say at the end that good work has been done here, and know where we affected the lives of the women, but especially the women in the rural area, has improved. Their human rights have been protected and promoted. As it is enshrined in our Constitution, Chapter 2, the Bill of Rights, which talks about the values and the rights of the human being. That says, irrespective of color or sex, this right has got to be promoted and protected. I thank you. And over to you, Gender Commission.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, for those opening remarks. The CEO and the CFO are going to further lead us in terms of the presentation. But I think it's important to note a few things before they do that. And also thank you for the invitation. And we have also said in the opening remarks that we hope that the commission will be in full swing and commissioners would be operating optimally because we have the commission. But we have the egg on our face, Chairperson. You remember that in August we reported that 6 out of 9 commissioners are appointed for a term of 2 years. We wrote to the Speaker about that, and the Speaker advised us to write directly to the President, and this committee should be aware of this. To actually ask the President to redetermine the terms of the 6 commissioners to be at least anything between 4 to 5 years. And yesterday, the 31st day, we received a letter from the President to say the President could not be able to redetermine the terms of commissioners will be operating outside the law. What we have with commissioners who have terms for 2 years, now they're 6 months into their contract. Next year they're looking for jobs, and we'll be remaining with three commissioners after 2 years. After 1 year, 4 months, definitely, and that's what we have, that's the reality that we're going to face in the commission. And it's going to actually affect the morale of the commissioners and how we do business in the commission. And I feel that this committee should be actually appraised in relation to that and assist us for the time, make sure that at least this commission functions optimally and has the required number of commissioners. Otherwise, if we lose those six commissioners, we'll be operating outside the law because we'll be having three commissioners, and this in there to be taking could be challenged somewhere else, and we won't be able to actually fulfill our mandate as a commission. I said that, Chairperson, I should start with that, so that the committee is aware of that and assist us in actually trying to actually fight that particular bill in terms of appointment of commissioner. And I already introduced ourselves, and thank you very much, Chairperson, for that, and we are calling upon the committee to assist us in actually doing that. I must also say that most of the inefficiencies in the commission have caused by the slow appointment of commission in the past. And last year, for example, we had about 6 months without enough commissioners, there were only three, and we're going to face the same dilemma. In 2006, the whole year where the problem started, we had only one commissioner as well. So those are the issues, and we really, because now with the committee focusing on the commission for gender equality, we hope that, you know, the operations must assist us to actually make sure that we have an optimal commission. Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'll hand over to the CEO to give us the annual performance report, and then after the CFO is going to actually give us the financial report, then we'll actually hand over to you, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. My presentation is going to cover specifically the work that we did as a commission under the strategic objectives, under the track plan and the annual performance plan that was launched with this parliament a year ago, or at the beginning of the financial year for 2011-2012. I've structured my presentation in such a way that I start with the constitutional mandate of the commission, highlight the strategic objectives that we had identified into the SAT plan and the APP, and then I will zoom in into those areas, so I highlight the performance that the commission undertook for that particular financial year. Just to also highlight, I think in the beginning when we were working on the strategic plan, we also engaged with the committee at that point in time. And as the committee would be aware, for financial year, most part of the financial year that we are reporting under, we're left with three commissions. And we should also applaud and thank this committee, because some of the strides that they did have now enabled us to have the commission fully functional as from June 2012, when new commissioners have been appointed. We must also indicate right from the beginning that we did not, for performance information, meet the 100% mark in terms of our targets. But it must also be highlighted that most work related to the publishing of reports, and at a point when we went to audit, the reports were in draft, but those reports have now been finalized and they've been published and they've been lodged with Parliament. In terms of our mandate, as we are all aware, the Commission for Gender Equality was put in place by Section 187 of the Constitution, and we've got additional powers that are espoused in our Enabling Act, the CGE Act of 1996. And just to run through, in terms of that act, we must monitor, investigate, research, educate, lobby, and advise Parliament and report on issues that concern gender equality in the country. We also monitor regional and international instruments and try and give the committee a picture in terms of how our country is doing in terms of the obligations on treaties that we are signatory to. We assist complainants in equality courts as per our mandate is espoused in Saputo. When we came up with our new strategic plan, we came up with four strategic objectives. The first strategic objective spoke directly to one of the mandates that is in the Act for us to ensure that we create and implement an enabling legislative framework that will ensure that we will attain gender equality. Strategic objective four is the protect part of our mandate, and it specifically looks into us protecting, promoting gender equality by engaging all the relevant stakeholders. Strategic objective three is specifically looking into the monitoring aspect of our international instruments and international obligations. Strategic objective four is the strategic objective that we created, and it also ties in with the turnaround plan that we had also engaged this committee on some years back, which looks internally to say we must be able to build a commission that will be effective and that will be efficient in ensuring that our mandate or the three strategic objectives above are worked upon. In the past, we used to have thematic committees, which were oversight committees of commissioners, and that's the committees that were used to play oversight on the secretariat and to ensure that the work as contained in the annual performance plan is being rolled out. We had gender and poverty, gender-based violence, democracy and good governance, gender, culture, religion and tradition, HIV/AIDS, and the National Gender Machinery. I will speak directly to the work highlights, the work that we did under all the strategic objectives that we had put for ourselves as a commission. Under the strategic objective one of the key areas for us to ensure that we work towards creating and implementing and enabling legislation is for the commission to engage with legislation, all the bills that come to Parliament that might have a gender equality issue. We as the Commission are expected to look through it and ensure that there is gender aspect on those legislations. For the year under review, we have set for ourselves to do a maximum of 10 submissions for the financial year. We have exceeded that target. We have been able to look into 13 different bills that were placed before Parliament, and were able to then input towards legislative change and ensure that a gender perspective is included. The number of legislations or bills that we made submissions on are the following. The Conjuncting Youth Unemployment, the draft Municipality Property Rates Amendment Bill, the Traditional Courts Bill, the National Traditional Affairs Bill, Sex Administration Bill, Further Education and Training Colleges Bill, Government Employees Pension Law Amendment Bill. Then we also looked into quite a number of policies. We responded to the climate change response, green paper. We also responded to the green paper on land reform. We looked into the national health insurance policy, and we then also worked on the national education evaluation and development bill. So those are fields that, as the commission, we looked into, we worked on, and as indicated, there were 14 for current for the reporting time frame. Another important leg in terms of us ensuring that there is an enabling legislative framework that the commission works on is to really look into policies of government and see how far we are doing on those policies that are already being implemented, those policies that are already being rolled out, including legislation that is already in place. So we look more into the bills, the new legislation that is coming in, but we also focus on the legislation that is already in place that needs to be implemented, and then we check how far we are. For that process, in terms of the work that we do in our research department, we have developed a website instrument which we call the Gender Barometer. And what this Gender Barometer does, this instrument, we administer this instrument into the different national departments, into municipalities, into provincial departments, to try and assess how far they are doing on issues of gender mainstreaming. And in the last financial year, we worked on national departments specifically, and we have been able to assess some national departments. These are some of the reports that we are also hoping to specifically engage the committee on, instead of just, you know, talking to them, just highlighting, doing annual reporting. We are hoping that we will get that space as well, Chairperson. We also undertook a study. We call it the gender, the water study. We were looking into gender mainstreaming within the water sector to see how far, what is going on. There are some obligations for different layers of government. There are obligations for municipalities. There are obligations for different water service authority, water boards and the like. And we zoomed in into that area as the commission to try and check if these designated authorities are really implementing talent legislation that is related to instruments of promoting gender equality within the water sector. The report has been finalized. We are actually currently even partnering with the South African Human Rights Commission because they are doing also hearings on sanitation. And therefore, because our water study has been finalized, we are working hand in hand with them, going out there, engaging some of the policy makers on some of the recommendations that have come out of that specific report. We undertook, as well as a process of evaluating the legislative framework that is there to see whether obligations are being met. We undertook quite a number of employment equity hearings, and the main thing there was we wanted to assess how implementation and compliance with the provision of the Employment Equity Act is doing. And for the reporting period, at the point when we came for reporting, the report is ready, but it is still in draft form. So that's one of the areas where, instead of at the point of reporting, we are having a public document, we are still having a draft report. So that's one of the areas where we did not meet what we wanted, because what we wanted would have been a public report at the end of the financial year. Also, still engaged in the process of legislative framework, we have engaged through our PEI, Public Education and Information Department, which takes care of processes under dialogue, education, and engaging with other like-minded institutions on some of these issues. We had and held a 50-50 dialogue where we really wanted to come together with other institutions that have been really in the fore in terms of this issue of 50-50 representation of women in political making in political decisions. And what we wanted to do was to engage these specific organizations and try and come up with some outcomes to say, for us to be able at some point to reach the 50-50 mark at all areas when it comes to issues of gender equality, what is it that we should do? Do we need legislation? What are the kind of other inputs that we can make to ensure that in the end we reach 50-50? Remember, 50-50 is also part of the Stardust Protocol, and therefore we also had to really be looking into that and working on that. We also undertook a process to check on the 365 days of action plan, the plan that used to be under the NPA, I believe currently has been shifted to Women's Ministry, and under this strategic objective, we specifically targeted that area to check because there are specific obligations by government departments, by civil society, and we were really trying to assess progress that has been made on those specific commitments. This report is ready, and we are even currently undertaking policy dialogue to really try and engage. It's one of the areas that has been highlighted to lead our work as the Commission for the 16 days to really engage with the relevant parties in terms of the findings of our assessment. We also undertook the victim charter, and as the committee would remember, this has been an ongoing kind of process, the victim charter. We have been on a year-on-year basis taking two departments just to check how far they are with some of the obligations that they put for themselves to ensuring that they protect victims of violence. And for the reporting period, we're specifically looking into the Department of Social Development and the NPA. We looked into, you know, their shelters, the developer centers for NPA, and to see if those obligations that they put for themselves in the victim's charter are actually being rolled out and being implemented, and that victims of violence are really enjoying some of the benefits or the protection that they need to when we go through these processes. That's the work that we have done under our first strategic objective, which speaks directly to issues of legislative framework. Under our strategic objective two, this is more the protect mandate, and this is more the work that we do in our legal department. And we look into quite a number of, as the Act, as I indicated right at the beginning, part of our main work is to ensure that we investigate complaints that come to us from the public, investigate complaints on our own accord if there is anything that we see that is not dealing well on issues of gender equality. We can be able to undertake those specific complaints. This is also a promote mandate where we then really go out and ensure that there's awareness and advocacy initiatives are undertaken, there are materials that are developed to ensure that we educate people on their rights, educate people on what are the kind of processes that they should follow, should they have any complaints, any problems, or should their rights be trampled on. Just broadly for the current reporting period, we have been able to open new files, 254. Our complaints, most of the complaints just to run through that we really work on, are complaints that are related to issues around gender discrimination, issues around domestic violence, maintenance cases, divorce, gender-based violence, sexual harassment, etc. And we do have some that speak more to issues around culture. We always have complaints and or cases around chieftainship of women, and those are the cases that will fall under that. In terms of our advocacy and awareness programs, we had to ourselves to initiate and engage with quite a number of stakeholders, such as the traditional houses of traditional leaders,
the South African Council of Churches and some of the initiatives for specifically those stakeholders we've been engaging. We engage on an ongoing basis on issues that affect gender, you know, issues of culture that affect gender. We always engage even with them more on issues of citizenship, where women are not given a chance to lead, even if by best rights they were the elders. So that's where those are a specific area where we really engage with traditional leaders. We engage in particular interventions for our 16 days of activism, and we then engage on two interventions for our Women's Month. And really, when you look into these activities and what we were trying to achieve, we looked really into issues relating to violence against the LGBTI community. There has been, we were even getting from our own complaints, you know, quite a number of cases that we were monitoring where there were hate crimes against this specific group. And therefore, we then specifically decided that those are the areas and activities we should zoom into, some of those we should create awareness and do advocacy work around those. And of course, we also did quite a lot of work around women in decision making and women empowerment, which is was part linked to our 50-50 processes that we were now engaging on when we were looking at our strategic objective one. One of the main activities under this strategic objective, which we did not meet as the commission, we had put a target for ourselves to be able to come up with material and be able to translate those materials into different languages. And initially when we conceptualized this activity, our target, knowing that we had a budget, a limitation of budget, we wanted to engage with PenHelp and look into whether they can help us and work and ensure that some of our pamphlets, some of our light materials are translated into different languages. However, when we engaged PenHelp, it became very clear that that's not part of their mandate and that they won't be able to do that. And they referred us to Arts and Culture, but Arts and Culture as well has got a very long list in terms of ensuring that some of these things that and materials get translated. And therefore, due to financial constraints, it was impossible at that point in time for us to be able to then translate those materials. However, we did not leave it at that because for this current financial year, one of the things that we are doing is to budget small out of the small that the little that we have to budget and ensure that at least we start somewhere and ensure that all our materials will eventually be translated into the 11 official languages. Under strategic objectives 2, there's a specific mandate as well from the Act that says we must collaborate as an institution. And I must say, this is the area where we really also try and engage with like-minded institutions, and it's a helpful area because this is where we are able to come together with either some of the Chapter 9 institutions, with community-based organizations, with some NGOs, and really doing the groundwork, you know, within communities without necessarily, you know, using much in terms of our budget, because if we collaborate, then we are able to share and say, in terms of our resources, who does what, and this is the area that has really just been helpful for us to be able to reach communities out there in provinces. We have been able to sign quite a number of MOUs and terms of reference, getting together and coming up with a plan with the different NGOs to say what are the kind of interventions that we will be doing. We had some of just by way of example, we have MOUs with different Chapter 9 institutions in different provinces. We have been able to collaborate with institutions like the NDI, and specifically when we are looking into the work that we did under 50-50 and the Legal Resources Center and Pakati, when we were coming up with a project on maternity benefits to look into what can be done for those women and even men that are in not informal employment, they are self-employed and therefore they do not, in terms of the labor laws, are not allowed to pay, you know, for maternity benefits. And therefore, that is specifically where we had set and collaborated with FASAC. Strategic objective 3, as indicated, it looks more in compliance on regional and international instruments that the country has ratified. And what we try and do is to look into processes of CEDAW, Beijing Platform for Action, Millennium Development Goals, and see how far we are in ensuring that, how far the country is in reaching some of the obligations in those specific treaties. The starting point for us and for this current year for reporting, we compiled a series. What we were trying to do was to say, let's go out and check what are the specific treaties out there that fall within the ambit of gender equality which the country is signatory to, and let's highlight the reporting timeline. This was going to be a tool, or is also a tool that is going to enable us to see at a point in time when the country misses its reporting time frame. We engaged with this same committee some years back, and we were engaging on the CEO when we had highlighted at that point in time that government did not report timely for however many reporting periods. And therefore, this, we came up with a tool that will at least help us so that if we see that there might just be a miss, we are able to engage with Parliament and alert the timely to say we need to look into this area. There might just be a problem. We might not be able to reach our reporting time frame. We also looked into a specific way. If you look into the African Charter on Women and People's Rights and the Rights of Women, and we have engaged this committee previously on this, there are some reservations which we feel as a Gender Commission that should not be there in the first place. And we have been trying to engage with DECO. Several meetings have been held, and we are hoping to also be able to engage this committee on some of those things to say, we are hoping these reservations will be upheld. You know, sometimes the country signs, but signs in some instances with the reservations without necessarily, you know, taking the whole treaty or the obligations as contained in the treaty. Just in terms of highlighting the work, the main thing that we still also want to really engage the committee on is all these reports that have been highlighted on the screen at this point. We've got the gender barometer report. It's got we need to really engage and see how are we doing on gender mainstreaming in terms of government. You know, government departments appear for these committees, and we need to be able to see whether things like gender budgeting, you know, are they really following some of those processes? How are they doing in terms of policies that are there to try and promote gender equality? We've got the water study, the local elections project. We did an analysis of party manifestos to say, how are we doing in terms of elections? Are we getting 50-50? Are the women, do we in our different manifestos, is it talk around issues of gender equality? So that's what that report is all about as well. We've got the 365 days, as indicated. We've got a report on our 50-50 dialogue. We've got a report on our dialogue on maternity benefits. We've got a report on the process that we undertook to have a dialogue just to try and see what are the issues related to this issue on consensual effects for underage children. We've got our employment equity hearings report.
And really those are some of the highlights in terms of the work and the report that the commission has been able to put in place, which we still need to, in the coming year, even currently, really engage with different key policymakers, engage with Parliament, and see how those recommendations and those findings can be taken forward. In terms of strategic objective 4, as I indicated, this is an eternal inward-looking objective, and we really wanted to focus on issues around governance, on human resources, on finances, on communication and information technology. We previously had reported, even before this committee, that our IT infrastructure is very old. It's a 2003 infrastructure. And the kind of budget that we have, it really becomes a little bit difficult for us to be able to overhaul and ensure that our infrastructure is up to date. For the year under review, what we did was to engage a service provider that will give us an analysis report just to say what is it that is in our infrastructure. I mean, it's old, we can't work properly, infrastructure, IT changes every year, and therefore we have that report. And now what we are working towards is just to try and do it in chunks, to do it in phases, to say this year maybe we can put 500,000 and then we work on upgrading our servers, and then so that's the process, and that's why we wanted that independent report so that we can be able to chunk it and say in terms of the different phases what is it that we can do to ensure that in the long run our infrastructure is overhauled. We looked into our human resources. Previously we really did not have quite a number of key policies, policies such as a performance management policy. Those policies are now in place, and we still see it as an ongoing kind of process. We need to go back all the time and check, are our policies still relevant? What are the kind of things that need to change? So we have, for this review, drafted quite a number. Our lead management has been problematic. We've been able to put a lead management policy just to ensure that some of the issues that we had been engaging on previously do not come back again. Under communication, we had a draft communication strategy that was put in place, and this has now been improved for this current financial year. We had some key vacancies in some of the areas. Other than the commission area, we had some key vacancies. At that point in time, for the year under review, we did not even have HOD for research. We had some people acting, but those positions have been filled, as we had indicated. The only position that we are still waiting to fill is the head of legal services. However, some key positions have been worked on and they can fulfill. Like in the last financial year, we have received an unqualified opinion from the AG, albeit with some matters of emphasis, which management has put in place some corrective action plans to ensure that the root causes of some of the issues that have been identified through our audit will be worked on. I will stop here, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. I will give anyone
want
to
answer
from the commission?
I'm not sure whether you will. It depends on how you want to run the process, whether you want us to finish with the financial presentation or you want to engage now. So, but the CFO is going to present on the finances.
Okay.
the Honourable.
Honourable members, what do we do? Let us finish the presentation.
Once more. On our chair, my presentation, as follows, is going to be a subset of what the CEO presented. The CEO presented the overall performance by the institution. My presentation will now attempt to dig into nitty-gritty of financial management.
Honorable Commissioner, you can serve your tea while you listen.
Thank you, Chair. The presentation is about the financial activities and position for the Commission for the year ended 31st March 2012. And this presentation shall be made with reference to the hard copy annual report circulated amongst members. The slides in the presentation with the summarized basically what's contained in the annual report, page 64 to page 109. And as has been mentioned by the Honorable Chair in the opening, this session is also about the review of how the appropriation was applied. Just to say that did we utilize funds allocated for the purpose earmarked, and that is also consistent with the PSM requirements and the Constitution of the Republic, the requirement, the imperative for accountability and transparency. The presentation is based on four pillars, which are financial statements. Financial statements are contained in hard copy document from page 74 to page 109 of the annual report. The second pillar of the presentation is on financial management, emphasizing more on analyzing the spending activities. And in the annual report, page 64, 266 makes provision of that analytical reporting. Third pillar is around the own outcomes, the AGSS report. There will be slides around what transpired from the audit. And the last one would be around what management is doing to implement the recommendation by the auditors. This slide summarizes what's called Statement of Financial Performance, which is on page 76 of the hard copy document, annual report. In summary, for the period that ended 31st March, we have received revenue to the tune of 55.6 million, the bulk of which comes from National Treasury,
which is monies appropriated to the amount of 55 million. The residue is basically income coming from sundry sources, like interest income on favorable cash balances. As expenses as well, totaled 50.7. The details are also contained for cross-referencing if one looks into the statement of financial performance. There are notes that cross-references the amount given. In those notes, we'll find further details as to how the spending was spread. And in summary, we have reported a surplus of 4.9 million, a surplus which will also be explained by the analytical report. As well, we can mention that we have made an application to National Treasury in terms of National Treasury practice note when surpluses are reported for a particular financial year. National Treasury can grant an institution a right to retain. Otherwise, the default rule is that the monies ought to be surrendered to National Treasury. In that regard, management has made an application to National Treasury. The purpose basically of applying to retain this monies is to do projects, amongst others, the one that has been mentioned by the CEO in a presentation, IT infrastructure revamp. As well, our fleet has aged. I think our IT and vehicle fleet, they are older than 6 years. And we don't have resources to replenish. And the source, available source as we speak, is from the surpluses. Hence, we made an application to the National Treasury to retain the surplus and utilize for those specific mentioned purposes. As well as we are cross-referencing between the presentation and the annual financial statements in the appropriate document, further details of where the surplus emanates from can be seen on page 109, a section called budget reconciliation. The next statement within the annual financial statement is what's called the statement of financial position. Traditionally balance sheet. Effectively, also in summary, one can mention that the CGE balance sheet has improved as compared to previous periods in which there was even question in terms of whether the CGE is a going concern, questions around whether we are solvent, whether we have got assets that can cover our liabilities. The situation has been turned around. The CGE financial position is a healthy one. The figures indicated in the slide show that we've got more assets than we have liabilities. And the bigger part of those assets is cash, liquid cash. So CGE will be able to honor its obligations. To pay what it owes to other entities, suppliers. So our balance sheet is strong, relatively, comparatively speaking. And as a result, that can be measured by the net asset position, which is basically the difference between total assets to total liabilities. Next statement, the statement of cash flow also contained in the hard copy. Effectively, that statement indicates that our cash inflows were 55 million, mainly being cash inflows from National Treasury. And we have applied the cash by paying out 53 million to cover staff salaries as well as for the payment of goods and services. And when one looks into the statement of financial, the cash flow statement, one would also see that there's a little amount of money invested in capital assets, we have purchased, other than using the money to pay salaries and then paying running expenses for the office and activities of the commission, there's been money that has been invested in what's called PPE, property and equipment, being assets of capital nature. We didn't buy much. We originally planned to, we have set aside around 1.3 million for purposes of you know, attempting to revamp IT infrastructure piecemeal. However, due to the fact that we wanted to have a comprehensive review of our IT capabilities, that process was halted and then the money was not utilized. We only used 111,000 for purposes of buying some office furniture and office equipment. The details are also contained in the notes to the financial statements as to which class of assets have been replenished. I think it will be under note 11, which deals with property, plant, and equipment. In effect, our cash on hand, cash in the bank, between the two financial years. The previous one that ended 31st March 2011 compared to the close of the 2011-12 financial year, which was on 31st March 2012, there has been an increase in cash resources for the CGE, an increase of 2.4 million. It's and this explains the fact that we unspent and then the money was basically kept safe in the bank. There's money that can be shown to be coming from the surplus. As we mentioned that the session is also around accounting for the appropriation. This slide talks to what has been allocated by National Treasury, and the slide gives comparatives between the previous financial year and the current financial year in terms of revenue allocation, the grants from National Treasury. And between the two financial years, the only growth in grant funding from National Treasury has been 6%, which is basically an adjustment for inflation. So in real terms, there has not been additional injection into the CGE. We are still operating in the same size of the budget between, I mean, compared the two financial years. The only allocation, further allocation, was basically to cater for price changes. And in summary as well, I think when we presented the strategic plan and the budget, it was indicated that the key driver of the CGE budget is cost of employees. An explanation has been given to the fact that we are service-orientated, we're using professionals, lenders, CGE activities toward achievement of the mandate. And as we go through some detailed analytical, it will be seen that the cost for employees amounts to the bigger size in the allocation. Next slide. This slide also gives a picture of how the original budget, or rather a picture of how spending occurred. And this picture is run back in terms of economic classification as well as programs, sub-program that the CGE is running with. If one analyzes, it can be seen on the extreme right column, first row, it can be seen that for the year under review, we have spent 67.5 of the total spending on compensation for employees, and that includes compensation for commissioners. The figures are shown per program. Another, the next bigger component of the spending comes from goods and services. And if you look into the COPI document, there's a rendition as well in a table form. On page 65 on the COPI document, a depiction of how the spending went as compared to the budget. There's a chart there, as well as a table which has got the distribution of spending, the cost center, the location, the province. Underneath, those are the details basically to indicate that the spending has been spread across programs, across economic classifications, and this slide seeks to just paint a picture, summary picture of how spending went. Further details, like I've indicated, are contained in the notes to the financial statement. There's a breakdown within the hard copy document that gives specific spending line items in the interest of transparency. And the spending can be summarized like it's indicated on the slide, that goods and services consumed 15.1 million of the 50.7 million that you spent. Goods and services consumed 15.1, and underneath there are subcomponents. Travel was one of the bigger ones. I think as we all know, the CGE is represented, it's present in all grand provincial offices, I mean provincial capitals, and as well in order to execute CGE work, traveling would involve, and for the IADA review we have spent 3.7 million. However, one can also indicate that there has been a substantial improvement in terms of cost containment, and it's also an indication of interventions by management. In the previous period, there was a finding by the AG of the fact that our traveling expenses were not necessarily properly procured, and management has since made an intervention to go into an open competitive bid process, and this is also an indication of the benefit of going competitive, because following a proper procurement process, value for money can be shown by a comparative saving. Professional services as well, details are contained in the annual financial statements, note there too, came to 3.9, and the remainder is as indicated on the slide. And the other sub-component is on compensation for employees. We just expanded basically on what has been reported on the last slide. Of interest is that although we spend a lot of money on compensation for employees, 60% of what is spent is for officials who are working within the core service delivery program. They consume 60% of the total salary bill, and the remainder is allocated 8.9 to corporate services, which includes office of the CEO, finance, HR, IT, and similar divisions. And commissioners are last, constituting 14% of the total at 4.8 million. Capital expenditure has been insignificant, 111,000. That, in a nutshell, summarizes how we have spent the budget, the 50.7 million that has been indicated to be expenditure for the year, the result has been spread. And the financial statements that I've been making reference to were audited by the AG. The viewers also indicated that the opinion was an unqualified audit opinion. However, the CGE, as we are crossing over the hurdles, there have been hurdles historically around weaknesses in administration, weaknesses in financial management, and those weaknesses, although we have really dealt as management, dealt away with quite a number of weaknesses when compared to previous periods, there are still some serious weaknesses that we are addressing, and those are also appearing in the report by the AG. And they are appended to the opinion. The AG has okayed our figures in the annual financial statement. However, there have been matters that have been emphasized, and they are listed. Also contained in the annual report, there's an AG report. There are some uncertainties that the AG identified around a specific case. There's a service provider who is suing, and a former service provider who CGE terminated the contract for reasons that it was inappropriately obtained. Has been suing CGE, I think, since 2008 or 9, and the matter has not been resolved as yet. However, in the interest of transparency, we disclose that in the internal financial statement as a contingent liability. There's a note in that regard within the AFS. And the second uncertainty that the AG expressed an opinion on as well is around the Department of Public Works, office rental. There's also a disclosure under contingent liabilities. The short story of it is that in 2005, there was a cabinet decision to the effect that the UA departments should control the budget relating to office accommodation. And therefore, the budget which was originally centralized at National Department of Public Works was devolved to user department. Unfortunately, the devolution did not occur beyond departments. I think from what has been told, even our sister institution, South African Human Rights, have had a similar challenge in that there was never budget devolved for us to take control of the rental arrangements for office space. And therefore, the offices that we have been occupying, the lease agreements there too, are still being managed at DPW because there has never been any devolution whatsoever. However, there's a miscommunication. DPW is consistently sending us bills as though there's been a total devolution to the CGE. We have had a number of meetings. The CEO has had a meeting in my presence with the acting DG to discuss the issue and challenges. And from the meeting, there's been an agreement, having considered all the facts, that it is true, DPW, I think some of the lease agreements and budget statute were devolved to Department of Justice and Constitutional Development. There's an agreement in summary to speak the effect that for the purposes of CGE's liability, it should be taken that the budget remains centralized at those user departments, DOJ and DPW, and therefore they should be carrying the liability. However, we have made a disclosure as well in the annual financial statement to the effect that we are still receiving a claim, a document that purports to claim rental fees from the CGE. The next weakness identified by the AG is around asset management. I think this is one of the weaknesses that management has considered too. For 2 years in a row, although the figures have been, the net clearing amounts were around 100,000 the previous year, this year 74,000. The audit and even asset management, when conducted our fiscal verification of assets, we have identified that there are quite a number of instances in which assets are not accounted for. Small items of office equipment, computer equipment would be missing. So it's a weakness around our own administration. There have been detailed recommendations from the AG. We have taken those recommendations and we have built those recommendations into the intervention action plans. It's an area that we really are working hard on. Receivables, there are a few, we've got two bigger receivables, long overdue, amounts that are owed to the CEE. One of which relates to travel expenditure by the former chairperson. Another was receivable from wrongful doing by consultants who were appointed by the CEE in 2009. We are claiming, we are litigating, we have open cases in that regard. Yes, in summary, one can say that we are acting upon what has been recommended by the AG. There are also findings around the compliance to regulations, irregular expenditure, some compliance, formal compliance requirements that were found. I think the details are contained in the auditor analysis report. And say for everything, one can say that management is hard at work. The commissioners are there to provide support. We have had quite a number of meetings between management and commissioners and commissioner committees to look into heightening effort in meeting to resolve this issue. Our action plans are geared towards resolving these issues as a matter of agency. I think compliance is a must, and that's the attitude that the management and the commissioners are also driving that to us. There have been in audit, the AG's report, some pronouncement around our performance information. In general terms is that we are found lacking in terms of how we define our targets. As an example, we're lacking in consistency. Sometimes, according to the AG, explanations that we provide are not adequate or relevant, and the details are also contained and summarized there in the report itself, and management has begun working on this thing, looking into getting a properly aligned, a properly smartened annual performance plan and every other plan that we use to roll out our responsibilities. And that will be the end. Thank you.
Thank you, CFO.
Chair, for wishing that you want to say. That's fine, Chairperson. I think we will engage you with the committee in terms of the presentation and that's the question. Just to add on.
To honorable members, there you are. We have heard the annual report 2011-2012 from the Commission on Gender Equality, whereby they presented their strategy plan, their APP, appropriation of funds, and we have the audit report or audit opinion. So I think we need to look at the alignment between the strategy plan and the APP. There are special plans, appropriation, the auditor general opinion, and then afterwards we'll include auditor general opinion with emphasis on certain areas, and then I think at the end you will conclude whether there is room for money after you have
interacted with those areas. So I'm now handing over or opening for debate from the commissioner. And then can you assist me wherever you will follow your numbers? Sorry.
Thank you, Chair. I think our concern with my honourable colleagues will lie on money spending, and you're all going to talk about more or less the same thing. My concern was the same as the previous I have a question to ask. The CG is spending such an excessive amount in performance bonus. Like, for instance, the senior personnel, somewhere in the 66,482, middle management is about 41,469, and the senior employees and others, the average is 44,321. I'm just asking, is the 13th check not less than the amount stipulated here? I don't say they shouldn't get, but can't we compare it with the 13th check? And the other question is, how accurate is the average cost in pay per employee? Because the CGE is changing something like 34 million in personal loss. And I don't know how many questions they allocated to others, but I've got a few questions, but I'll come in later. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I have so many questions, and I'm trying to get things in order here. Remember, let's take a bite, and we'll have another round. Don't unroll the paper till the end.
Oh, should I now stop?
No.
Oh, I take a bite. Okay.
Can you listen to
some
me?
Of my questions?
Honourable Member, can you listen to me?
Yes, thank you.
I say you're going to have a second.
Yes, I realise that. Yes. Thank you.
So don't unroll tape until it is finished. Leave it up, please.
Okay. My question is, and I'm rather disappointed with the opening of this meeting. And my viewpoint is, and this is on the term of office of commissioners. All of us sitting here as MDs also have terms. With the 5-year term, it is also coming to an end quite a lot. And if I can speak for I can speak on the situation in my party, we cannot in any way say that my term is coming to an end. It is affecting my performance, and I cannot deliver on my mandate. I need to be competent until the very last day of office. And I cannot agree with the chairperson that is putting that to us right at the beginning, and unhappy with the situation that the president is not prolonging the term of office. We should all do our very best, no matter what period of term of office is, until the very last minute, because we are all waiting for it. Otherwise, we should not even. There is really no other way than giving and serving. So I cannot, it is a very feeble excuse to me, and I am rather upset about it. My second question then is on donor funding. Do you have any donor funding nationally and internationally? And I'm asking this because of the fact that you related to not having funding to upgrade your IT. And I agree, IT upgrade is of critical importance to any department to work and to achieve their goals, to work competently and to achieve their goals. So do you have any funding on that? The second question is, and I'll stop there after that one. In the 2010-11 annual report documented by you, the communication strategy was completed. Yet, I find that now in 2011-12, you intend to engage in external services to draft the communication strategy. Was it ever completed? If not, give us the relevant details why it was not completed. I'll stop there, then we have a second part. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I think I'm not going to
to delay the process, I've got only a few questions. You know, don't unroll the case. I know how levels you take it. Mine is under the overview of policy and legislative submission. Under bullet 3, where it says that the Commission held implement its equity hearing to assess implementation of and compliance with the provision of the Employment Act. For the reporting period, the report was still in draft and not published as we as been edited. My question is, what causes the delay of the report as it was edited? And the second one, it was page number 13. Under 50-50 dialogue, where the Commission successfully hosted a dialogue or to a political party. My question also is, which political parties were invited and how many and what are their inputs? The last question, but not, that is the second bulletin under the same page. Under the strategic objective of the 65 states of action plan, the question was, hence the national plan was assessed due to the progress made or commitments made. What were the comments? And secondly, is there any time frame that achieved goal of the implementation of a comment? Thank you. Oh, thank you very much, Chairperson. And thank you, CDE, for your presentation. You know, sometimes, by the way, in the ICU, but at least you are alive now, even though we are not yet convinced that everything is up to scratch. But want to congratulate you and thank you for your presentation. Certainly, Chair, I'm not yet convinced on the services that, or on the visibility and the accessibility of the service rendered by CGE. I'm referring here to people accessing you in most deep rural areas. You know, I'm from Mpumalanga, far in this deep rural area. I haven't seen you or I haven't smelled CGE in that constituency. So I'm raising this because of those frustrations experienced by our people there. I think we have to improve here in terms of your public education, your awareness campaigns, especially in the rural areas. And secondly, their relationship with the Department of Women, Children, and Persons with Disabilities. I'm raising this, Chair, because in one way or the other, you need each other. There was a bill, and I'm not quite sure whether you capture it in the next financial or in this financial year, on the women empowerment and gender equality. You are not mentioning it now in the previous year. I don't know whether you have made inputs to that or whether it will be part of the new on the next financial annual report of the coming year. The CEO made mention of vacant post in key management positions. What was the reason for not appointing people in that post? Were these posts defunded? Because I know that you indicated that you've got surpluses, and definitely it will not be the issue of departure. The other thing, make it we a translator for the Hofedolena information here on that besides English.
Thank you. the first question is on the supply chain. That's similar to what my colleague has just asked, that when there is so much to be done about issues of gender in this country, couldn't there have been a cross-subsidization rather than saving money? I'm always not happy when you keep money in the pocket as there is so much to be done and people need those services. So the point is, if you might say we couldn't use the money because we didn't have human resource, because there are vacancies, those that are there, couldn't they have cross-subsidized and delivered even more? I'm just saying the big principle is, if you keep money and people need it out there, is it really a good service to our nation? The second point, which is a general one, I heard over the weekend the big excitement. I'm surprised that here in this committee, within the commission, nobody is mentioning that South Africa's research has been Department of Health has discovered a cure, as they say, which they are still working further on it, for HIV. I mean, that's a big thing. It's a groundbreaking thing that we should all support and monitor. And I don't see the excitement here, but for the commission and even the high-level task people that were here, this is a question I wanted to ask, because it will also help the whole of Africa, since this is an epidemic that is for the whole of Africa. But what do you think we could support with financial to get the research completed, or how else? But especially for Africa, the high level, and you, the commission, couldn't you facilitate, or women, couldn't you facilitate in a sense that we support that project so that it, because they said it is now 80% a cure to HIV, what a relief it would be. Because women will never be liberated if they are ill. And the high task people told us HIV is affecting women more than any other person on this planet, especially on this continent. So I just want to know what support, at least let's discuss and not just be quiet about this, so that the research can be completed. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I always regret coming last because my colleagues have all asked the very good questions. But let me just also just, I'll be brief, I'm mindful of our science challenges. I also just wanted to note that comparing this annual report to other reports, I was concerned that this was the only report which did not list the performance or the attendance of councillors. And it's a question that has been raised, and I would like to know. I know from ICASA's side of, they've also got councillors that also didn't list their performance of councillors, and they said it was some sort of format that they followed, a treasury format. So I just want to know from your side why the performance of councillors were not, or commissioners, sorry, were not listed. On page 56 of this annual report, I note that you've got 82 employees and 26 vacancies, and my colleagues asked the question on why we have been unable to fill these vacancies, considering that you had the money allocated, but you did not spend it. So, you know, just also to add my voice to that, but I had a concern there, which it looked like you've only got one employee with a disability. I wanted to clarify that. So out of the 82 employees, you only employed one employee with a disability, if I'm reading it correctly, if I can just get clarification on that. And then to go further on the issue of performance bonuses, you know, I've got a fundamental problem with institutions paying performance bonuses when they've not met targets. So I would really like to ask you whether the people who have received performance bonuses actually achieved 100% of the targets that were set out for them. Because, you know, as soon as we start to reward bureaucracy, give performance bonuses willy-nilly, then I become concerned, because already you have listed a certain check, which is a sort of a performance bonus in a sense, or a reward for an employee. So I would really like to know whether these performance bonuses were linked to some sort of performance management system, whether you've got a performance management system in place, and whether this performance management system evaluated the performance of a specific individual, and whether on that performance
the performance bonus was awarded. I would really like to know whether that is the case, because all the general reports said only 45% of your targets were reached. Then if we look at the excessive performance bonuses, what warranted these performance bonuses? And I would like to know that. And to Honourable Teke, with regard to your visibility and your accessibility to ordinary people, to the ordinary South Africans who you are meant to serve, I want to know what was done with regard to outreach programs and making yourself more accessible to communities for the financial year in review. Have you looked, for example, at the website and SMS as a two-way communication process, whether these sort of avenues have been explored? And then to wrap up, I want to know whether you will just tell me, we've looked at your annual report and you seem to have many supervisors and very little normal people or ordinary foot soldiers in the different programs. Is your actual, I know you talked about human resources plan, but how sustainable is the organization going forward considering that you look a little bit soggy in management? And then just lastly, with regard to value for money that the chairperson spoke about, I saw a lot of keywords which came from your presentation, which was, we looked into, we monitored, we made submissions, but I did not really see plans to track and monitor your intervention. Did we receive tangible outcomes for taxpayer money? What were the real successes? What were the real interventions? With regard to legislative reviews and interventions initiated by the CGE, were they successful? Can you give us that information? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Sanima. You were worried to be the last, but CGE, I have noted the following questions that you have to respond to. Understanding vis-a-vis saving and quality service delivery. I have noted unfilled or vacant posts. Wish you to have a lot of unfilled or vacant posts is a clear indicator of underspending. The concern of members on rural areas, accessibility vis-a-vis disability, translations, progress, how far are you? Performance, bonuses, vis-a-vis targets and KPIs, disability employees, one. Value for money with regard to plans, tracking and monitoring success. Yeah. I think these are the ones that I was able to capture. So can you respond now? I will give a chance to you to respond.
Thank you. Thank you, President, and thank you to honorable members for those questions which are critical to the CGE processes. Let me start by the first question by honorable member Lamola about her disappointment. I think we should start there. To say why I raise that issue is because these commissioners were appointed, we understand, and these commissioners have put together a plan on how they're going to actually work hard to ensure that the CGE mandate is achieved at the end of the two-year term. And they even had a spread plan to actually look into these issues, and we have that plan already that is going to be presented in this committee next year. So they are actually doing their work as commissioners. The issue that I was raising is that appointed in June this year, and in June 2014, they won't be there, which is the issue of continuity is a critical issue that we should not run away from. So that's what I was trying to raise, but not to say these commissioners are committed to the program and the work of the Commission for Gender Equality. And I did not get this from them, but it was, I got it four years, 8 months. But it's the feeling that I feel as chair of the Gender Commission that this is what is going to happen. Not to say they themselves have said to me, we cannot deliver. They are delivering on the mandate of the as we speak. I'm going to take two questions and leave it to the CEO and the CFO and other commissioners to respond, and we'll tick in the process as we go along. The other question was around the issue of what do commissioners do, the programs and so that are going to actually answer why that was not actually included. But inside the commission, commissioners, they develop policy. It's it's our duty. You can see the number of things that have been developed thus far, in addition to asset management, in addition to programs. Some colleagues, one of them spoke about the outreach program. As a commission, these new commissioners, as we came in, they saw there were two strategies. One, the outreach strategy on legal and outreach strategy on public communication. And they said, let's combine the two, have one outreach strategy, which is going to assist us to go to actually go to communities. And they even tried and beef up the Office of Communication in terms of what is it they're supposed to do to ensure that we reach out to communities. Another issue is which there are committees, the moves, there's also a question around the moves, but some of these questions are intertwined. To say, how did you move from thematic areas to what we'll be doing in the next year? When this commissioner came in on the 1st of June, we looked at the issue of him. And after looking at the issue of regulations on how we should plan, we've realized that the things are not giving us any way to plan properly. Therefore, what we've done as commissioners is to agree to a focus area. In terms of, for example, change some of the things to be focus areas. We're not going to have poverty, now we're going to have economic empowerment for women. So that at least we try to be optimistic and positive, as much as we're dealing with poverty-related issues. But that's what we're going to have. The issue of health, it was raised by Honorable Member Kekane as well. But we had a committee called HIV and AIDS. Now we have gender and health to try and incorporate other issues. And that Honorable Kekane is going to be the issue of HIV and AIDS. I complete another issue. And I should say why we should speak about it is because we are reporting on the 2011-2012 annual report. And therefore that's one of the initiatives, Honorable Kekane, that are very, very important. So I don't want to say, but those are the issues that I said that I would start off with. I'll think when I come back, Chairperson, and have my life in other questions. But let me give the opportunity to CEO, CFO, and Honorable Commissioner here. Respond to administrative-related questions, because most of the questions are administrative-related. The issue of surpluses, and issues that relate to performance bonuses, transmission, visibility, answers that can pull out of spending.
Yeah. Thank you, Chairperson. I will take questions on surplus as against cost subsidization, as has been raised by Honorable Member Kekane. That has been reported, also shown in the financial statements. Page 109, salaries has contributed, savings on salaries has contributed to the reported surplus. This salary component included salaries for commissioners. And as we know that during the course of that financial year, there were vacant positions for commissioners, which were outside of the control of the commission. Were in control of the National Assembly and Presidency. So as a result, the money which has been earmarked for that particular purpose could not be diverted in any way whatsoever. The second element dealing with cost subsidization is the fact that there are also specific rules within PFMA that limit environment to 8% of cost of employees. So to a degree, most of the savings, but limited to 8%, were diverted to do other CGE activities classified under goods and services. So indeed, it was not desirable to report on surplus, because we normally say the CG is underfunded. However, due to the presence outside of our control, surpluses were reported. The second question on performance bonuses, I would want to refer the committee to page 95, note 5. This note somewhere in the middle. We think that the performance bonus paid out of 1.7 million, and that relates to performance for the preceding year, preceding financial year. So linking it to organizational performance, it does not talk to performance that achieved according to the AC report under performance of 45%. It relates to performance that has been reported in the previous financial year, and payments in that regard have been made. Also, as maybe further information, if you look into comparatives, one will see that there's not been any money spent in this regard in 2011 financial year, because during that period there was no credible system of performance management, and therefore management and commissioners in those periods decided that unless there's a system, there wouldn't be any performance bonus ever paid out. So the system was created and piloted early in the 2011-12 financial year, and then in that regard payments were effected. The other component of 1.3 is a provision, it's a book entry that has been made. No money has been paid out as yet to any employees. In the new system that we have, performance bonuses to be based on performance agreements that has been entered at the beginning of the financial year. And those performance agreements are linked to organizational performance objectives, and as a result, an assessment of performance would be done correlating to organizational performance. So this book entry, it was just a provision. Accounting requires that should there be a liability, that liability ought to be recorded. So the provision was made on the basis that there was an obligating situation, condition, that put CGE liable for performance bonus to employees. However, subject to performance assessment, which would be considered at 1.3, is not necessarily what is going to be paid out. The payout will be on the basis of actual performance as assessed according to performance management system. So the 1.3 is just a book entry. We have not paid out as yet. That's a provisional entry. We were foreseeing liability, but it was quite early, and that liability would not necessarily materialize at 1.3 million.
I'll start with right at the beginning. I think one of the questions that was asked, and specifically to say that in our classification of cases under legal department, we have a classification which we have called other, and that we must elaborate on that, especially looking at the fact that Northern Cape was the highest. We deal with cases, and in some instances you find, and specifically for the Northern Cape and province, there was an issue, you know, around divorces. In as much as there might just be, you know, processes that we enter for a divorce, but this was related specifically to settlement. We picked up attorneys within that province whereby there was a specific attorney that when they deal with divorces and when they then draft settlement agreements for people, those settlement agreements have got clauses that are really not empowering women. And therefore, we can't classify a case like that as divorce, for instance, because we did not go and engage on divorce proceedings. But we were at a point where somebody will be able to come, and when you look into the kind of settlement agreements that a court has awarded between the two parties at the point in time when they divorced, we found that there were some unfavorable you know, conditions against women, and therefore for cases like that, and specifically for the trends that we're picking up in Northern Cape, we would classify as such under other, because otherwise sometimes it becomes a little bit cumbersome. Our legal officers also get engaged by the public, where sometimes they give them, you know, give a draft as a will, you know, how should my will look like, and all that. And in as much as those are not necessarily gender discrimination cases, but they've got an element where women should be at least empowered to say in your will what are the kind of things that you should put in. So those kind of cases, we try and classify them under other, because it's quite difficult for us to be saying will and da-da-da-da. Sometimes we don't necessarily get a will all the time, but we find that these are matters that can crop here and there where we are supposed to then give advice. And because we would have spent resource, whether it's time or the like, then we have to record it to say we have then been able to deal with other classification of cases which still have an element of gender discrimination or gender inequality on in them. In terms of donor funding, Honorable Lamola, we don't have donor funding. How we deal with this issue is that if when we plan our work and we see that there's a specific project that we can engage, then we always go to institutions such as UN Women, but that is more program related. For instance, in the past financial year, when we wanted to take women's ministry through a process of a mock session for them to be able to be aware what to expect when they get to deliver and they report before the CEBO committee, we did a proposal. It was a specific project. We went to UN Women and were able to fund it. So funding, we don't have funding that really looks into, you know, us internally or a sustained kind of funding, but how we have really been engaging with it is more on the project. If we see that there's a specific project that we want to undertake, it might just take a lot of our budget. And for instance, the CEDAW, and we wanted to actually fly the CEDAW, some of the CEDAW committee members from New York, so that when we take the ministry through that process, they are taken through the process that will say it's almost what will happen in January 2011 when you go and report before the CEDAW committee. And we saw that that is going to be a little bit expensive, and therefore we took it to the project on the site, and we engaged with different organizations, and then UN Women were able to come to the party and help us. And perhaps that's something that we could look into to see, especially when it comes to, you know, issues of infrastructure, our IT infrastructure, if there can be institutions, you know, out there that are interested. But as well, because we're an independent institution, we try as much as possible to guard against.
Can you please don't go long, 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 long. The time is 12:42, and we have
thank you, Chair. I think I'll actually stop there for that particular question. Can we engage on our 50-50 dialogue? And also included in that is also monitoring of the elections. We did engage political parties. We had a dialogue where the Big Six was invited. And we had representatives of political parties there, and we engaged with them. We had a report, we call it the Elections Monitoring Dialogue Report. So that report is out there, and that report has actually been lost with this parliament. So we did engage with political parties on issues around 50-50 and the kind of things that we look at, you know. In terms of our employment equity report, you know, when we, and this is also a lesson for us, when we conceptualized the process for employment equity hearings, it was a process that was done by the legal department to say, a legal department, let's go through a process and call people to appear before us, and for those people to account to say how far have they gone in terms of the Employment Equity Act. And in so doing, only the legal department was really involved in that process. It was led by commissioners, and we were questioning and getting responses and all that. However, at a point in time when we then asked the department to give us a report, our report was making an analysis, and it was a lesson for us to say, when we do employment equity hearings, we should include another unit which we have, which is the research department. And in this case, what we did was to say legal must put a report, and a draft report was put. And then we gave the report to research, for research to alert us and tell us if it's ready for us to go for printing. But there were quite a number of analytical issues that the research department had identified, and we felt that this is too an important report to let it go in the way that it is. We should rather beef it up and take into account all the issues that the research department had raised. And this is why now in the current financial year, we ensure that when we carry on with the employment equity hearing, that research department becomes part of that process instead of us saying it's too legalistic, it's around compliance, legal must do it. So that's the reason why that report, that particular report was delayed. In terms of visibility and accessibility, you know, this is also a very sore point to us as the commission. We would like a situation where we are not only in provincial metropolitan cities, but we are able to get into, you know, the deeper roots, into further, into other communities in the rural areas. But, however, our budget is very limited. In a provincial office, I've got 3 personnel that run programs. I've got 1 legal officer. If we are taking Mpumalanga, if we are taking KZN, if we are taking Eastern Cape, I have 1 legal officer that must cover those jurisdictions. I've got 1 research officer that must cover those jurisdictions. And I've got 1 PEI or outreach officer that must be able to cover those specific jurisdictions. And sometimes it becomes impossible, really, for us to reach, even though we try and augment that by always collaborating with NGOs in specific areas. However, you see, those interventions are such that we will then target a specific area, maybe for a specific week, and then we will then have to move around and go somewhere else. And in that way, even though we are there, but the programs and the work is not necessarily sustained, and therefore it becomes a little bit difficult, you know, for visibility. We really do try to engage with other institutions just to ensure that we are out there and we are able to reach a community. In terms of the WISI bill, we did not report on the WISI bill because it's some of the issues that are currently happening. We have been working very closely with Women's Ministry on the WISI bill. We have been able to also input some of the recommendations and findings that came out of our 50-50 dialogue and our 50-50 engagement into that specific bill. And even now, currently, when it was in Parliament, we have been able to do a formal submission. But that submission will only be highlighted in the year that is now going to, that we are currently rolling out. And in terms of vacant positions, I had vacant positions specifically for key managers. We were advertising. It's not like we just sat and then we were advertising, and we really had such difficulty, you know, in getting the correct people for the job. If you look, for instance, the HOD legal position, and the other thing is we're also trying to get women in some of these positions, and therefore if we run a process and we don't get any women, then we say the person who's acting must keep on acting, and then we then try another process to see how we can get people that we are trying to attract. And therefore we were able to fill the position for HOD research right towards the end of the financial year, I think during November, December. That's when we were able to fill that particular position. Legal position, I mean, the last time I advertised, I got 9 CVs and it was all men, and we really must lead by example as well as an institution when it comes to issues of 50-50. We want a woman for that position, and we are trying to do everything in our power to ensure that we get a woman.
Thank you.
in some of those positions. In terms of translations, point taken, Honourable Sweke, we are already, have already started. I mean, like I indicated, we're going to start small. The first part now, we've developed a pamphlet that speaks to our mandate, and that then it will be easier for that's the first phase that we are going to be doing. With our limited budget, but we are going to ensure that at the end, all our relevant materials that we use in committees out there are translated, so we will really perfect that particular process.
The CEO, unless it's on the point of order. I want to take questions for you unless it's on the point of order.
For specific comments, I know there was an interest on 365 days action plan report. In actual fact, I'm hoping that we will get a session where we really deal with some of these reports, because we would really want members of this committee to take note of some of the findings and the recommendations that we make in these reports. But I will also allow the HOD for itself just to give us highlights in terms of what are the issues that we found fixed.
CEO? I'm still the chair.
Oh, sorry.
Or are you the chair now? Over to you, sir.
Sorry, chair. Thanks very much. Just briefly, the study that found basically four major things with the study. Sorry, with the program, we found that the program suffered from a set of problems, major ones, poor coordination. We found that there were problems with budgetary funding. Many departments basically did not take that program seriously. Many of them never allocated resources to that program. In fact, we found NGOs more committed to that study than government departments. Government departments had no time for that program. Many of them did not take some of the commitments that were allocated to them into their annual program and provide funding for them. So basically, we think the government departments had no time for that program. More NGOs and civil society organizations paid more time to the programs than government departments.
Chair, there were some questions that were not, I know, that were not answered, but I want to... I'll give Krishna to you if you allow me. But let me just answer the first question around other complaints. People in category which other complaints. People, because they go to CGE, they just come to CGE, and when we assess the complaint, if it's not gender sensitive, people just come for a murder case, for example, to come and report to CGE. And we always number those as other complaints. Because what in the past we're not recording those. But now because we take time to listen to this person and so on, now we record corruption issues, administration, and we refer them to relevant authorities. But we also record them because our members, they take time to listen to them and they try to record them properly. It might be other complaints that we don't deal with. Some, they are. I also want to report the question around the 45% percent that was raised by Honorable Van der Merwe. Yes, it's true that that's why the Auditor General has actually found that, but what I've also realized at CGE is that when they came and audited us in April, for them it's yes or no. Even if you have a report ready to be printed, if they cannot see the report, for them it's no. Even if you can show them the draft report to say, here's the draft report, it's ready to be printed, but they say for them there is no in between. It's yes or no. And if you print it, produce it outside, then they will say, no, it's 45%. That's one point. But as the CEO has reported to say, most of those reports have been printed, like the employment equity and so on. But also, when it comes to issue of targets, as a commission, we cannot be only focusing on the targets that we have in the strategic plan. Because there will be other issues that will emerge, like children, for example, not part of the strategic plan. And the same parameters are going to say, where is CGE? We don't see you there. Then we end up going to those areas to actually try and actually work on those areas, new emerging gender equality issues, for example, the killing of lesbians and gays. When we look at our annual report, it's 33% of targets that were not planned. If you total that, which means SCGE, we perform 78% in relation to 78% to targets were not planned. And some were conducted, done, but they were not finished at the time of the audit. So those are some of the issues. The issue of disability, which was with only one employee, it's true that that is correct. But that this commission was done when they came in July. They actually started the CEO to revise the employment equity report, the plan. So tomorrow we are adopting that employment equity plan because the plan is tomorrow and it's part of the package. Because we realized that there was blindness in relation to handling issues of disability. And they are going to pass and we are going to actually ask the CEO to make sure that plan is actually populated and implemented. The relationship between CGE and the Women's Ministry, our relationship with the Ministry is legal. It's a legal relationship with the Commission for Gender Equality Act. Sometimes we have to monitor the Ministry. For example, the 365-day program, we're going to actually ask them to come and respond to issues raised in that particular report. There is an administrative relationship where, as a Commission, where actually our funds that actually go via their post for us to actually receive those funds. It is an administrative relationship. Then us as a commission, new commissioners, we've met with the minister on the 9th of June to talk about all the issues that affect us. In other issues like Westfield and so on, we met together with the minister. And in that meeting, we have to agree that we need to have a workshop where we are going to be able to clarify our roles on all these issues. But ours, it's really different. Because now, as we speak, as a commission, we are the only institution that actually issued a statement around the 50-50 party in the upcoming Mangaung and so on. Because as an institution, we are, as an institution, obliged to actually comment about public, private, whatever, in relation to gender equality issues. But then, as a commission and the ministry, we understand our own legislative framework in relation to how we should actually perform our work. So, Mr. President, I know Commissioner, and also announced the issue of reports, I'll also give them. There was a lot of debate in the past about how we package the report. We include commissioners. The commissioner's report is part of this, but because we have four basic objectives, everything that you do, whether these commissioners, as we speak, yesterday we had plenary, we are continuing tomorrow, all of them, they write reports and they submit them, they present them in plenary. But when the report is being systemized as a commission, therefore, issues judged by the commission are also put under those four basic objectives. Therefore, commissioner reports are not out of the foresighted objective. It's supposed to be part and parcel of those. But we've taken the lesson from the honorable members to say, maybe we need to actually show as a commission the work of the commissioners going forward so that you can see exactly what we do as commissioners. And I think it's a lesson for the commission, and in that spirit we're going to show that the work of the commission is part of this report. The policy work and so on is part of that. It's not staying out clearly, so that you can be able to delineate and see that this is the work of the commissioners and this is the work of the secretariat. So, Chair, I know that two commissioners were dying to actually make one or two comments, but if I know that you want to give us another set of...
It's already answered now.
Over to you, member. The number one is the number two. Honourable, number three. Namla, Honourable, number four. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, Dear President. I'll be brief. I forgot to ask earlier on page 70 with regards to the... What is the general report? It states, point 24, the accounting officer did not take effective steps to prevent irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditure as required by the various sections of the PMFA, and also point 26, effective and appropriate disciplinary steps were not taken against officials who made or permitted irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditure. I want to know why, because the PMFA is very clear with regards to when people are in contravention of that act, what steps can be taken, and since we are working with taxpayers' money, we need to be very sensitive when people are caught with their hands, well, not in a cookie jar, but I would really like to know what steps are being envisaged or are being taken or have been taken against these officials. And then also, I would like to know, the CFO spoke about performance management. I take your point with regards to the performance bonuses, that it's only an allocation, but you seem to suggest that performance management is only now being implemented, and therefore I want to know whether performance management contracts have been signed by all the staff, managers, and councillors, or is it still a process, and if it's still a process, whether we can have deadlines or time frames in that regard. Thank you very much.
I think it's a follow-up to a question that was raised by either Honourable Peterson or Ngalo on the issue of the employment and vacancies. I think in page 57 and 59 the promotions that they are not correlating one another. The number of vacancies, the number of posts, and the number of posts filled. Even promotion in the page, I think it's page 59, you mentioned that there are no promotions that were made, but in your annual report, it was like 5 promotions. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. After all the explanations and answering, maybe I didn't hear what I'm going to ask you. If it is expected, then it's right. You had a meeting with the Department of International Relations and Courts. And I would like to know what was the outcome of the meeting to remove reservations of African Charter of Human and People's Rights on the rights of women. The other one that I'm interested in is the meeting with the traditional leaders and the Council of Churches, were the engagement successful, or if yes, in what way? Thank you.
Thank you, Chief. Mali, page 70, on asset management, 23, bullet 23 there, bank reconciliations are not performed on a daily basis. I'd like to know from the department if they have now decided to do that on a daily basis, and it will definitely help you lot. And then on leadership, do you have any challenges facing your leadership? And I'm asking that because of under leadership with in the annual report from the Auditor General, management comes up 4 times, 5 times. The accounting officer and management did not have adequately exercise oversight. Management did not timely monitor the implementation of actions to address internal control. Management did not adequately establish and communicate policies and procedures. And even on the financial performance management, management did not prepare regular, accurate and complete financial performance reports. Management did not review and monitor appliance. So I would like to know if you have challenge with your management. And then on page 95, and this is again on other. The company contribution other, 517,499 on page 95. And then my last question, Chair, is on disciplinary cases. I'd like to know if you do have any disciplinary cases at present pending in your department. And if so, excuse me, are these employees on special leave? Do they still receive their salaries? 3, when will their cases be finalized, if you have any cases? And 4, who is at present filling their position as to allow the CGE to still perform to the best of their ability? I thank you. Over to you, question.
In terms of, I'll start the program first. In terms of the reservation under the African protocol, yes, we held a meeting with DECO. A follow-up meeting was they had then indicated that they would consider what is put on the table and then there will be a follow-up meeting. We have been trying to engage with them. That has not happened. We haven't had a follow-up meeting. And we are, that's why in my report I was even saying we're hoping that those are some of the things that we should highlight
specifically with this committee, because some of the clusters and clusters that we have reserved as a country, it's quite unnecessary because we already have some national legislation that deals with some of those issues. And our problem is that as South Africa, we are also seen to be a lead for other African countries. And if in some instances we reserve in some of the clauses, which really do not even need any reservation as they are already, you know, legislation that is in place to take care of those issues, it really becomes a problem. Our engagement with House of Traditional Leaders is ongoing. I mean, as it is, we have issues that we put on the table that are culture related, that we feel that those issues inhibit gender equality. And therefore, it's an ongoing engagement. We are hoping that, you know, at one stage we will be able to find each other. But it is an ongoing engagement. In some instances, we win. I mean, previously we have reported when we are really engaging in Limpopo around some of the citizenship issues there, where we were able to actually win and that was allowed. But in some instances, we have now been engaging with the one in Eastern Cape. We have the Sekau case there. But it is really an ongoing relationship where we try to all the time put it on the table to say what are the kind of things that we feel are almost people hide behind culture, but to hit it, gender equality. In terms of disease, look, when you look into the irregular expenditure that we have, part of it is more on, you know, employees not getting, you know, the required free quotation system. And if you look even over the years, this is an area where we have really been struggling, which at some point we didn't even have a supply chain management unit. Now we have a one person there. But clearly, there is more that needs to be done because if you just have one person who must deal with demand management and logistics and all those things, there are bound to be matters that fall within the crack, which we are addressing in terms of our own systems at this point in time. For the financial year under review, we did have some disciplinary processes, but those were done. We had reported, I think, previously where there were issues of some of our provincial staff claiming fraudulent kilometers, i.e. I have used my car to go and do a workshop or whatever process for the commission somewhere else, whilst in actual fact some of those people have used our fleet and not their own car. So we had those DCs in different provinces, and those processes have now been completed. We're taking it into the CCMA at some point, but those processes have been completed. The last one was done not so long ago. I can't remember the date, but it will probably be more clearer in the coming financial, I mean, annual report for the current financial year. In terms of assets, we've now taken into account some of the advices from the AG. We are currently now ensuring that people in our provinces do quarterly assessments of the assets, and then we get those reports from head office, and then we have then also agreed that what we will then do is, on a quarterly basis, we must receive with the provincial manager signing off to say these are the assets, so we can really check some of these losses, but also ensure that internal audit then does two audits in a current in a financial year to ensure that those quarterly reports that we would have received on assets are proper. So those are the measures now that we have put in place, and as well we have launched an investigation. You know, because when you look into this issue of assets, it does not only even speak about assets that were, you know, acquired by the institution 2 years ago or a year ago. there was a dealer, you know, asset register that was there previously, and as we did our asset count, we found that quite a number of those assets were not there. And the only way for us to be able to say they have been correctly removed from the asset register is for us to get into an investigation process. And the AG was even aware, even during this reporting time, that we are embarking on that particular investigation by an independent body that will then give us, you know, a proper report so we can see whether is there only human elements or whether there are also other issues. And that report will then be used to take action upon, depending on what the results are, then a proper action will then be taken. You know, in terms of our, you know, there's an issue around leadership that was raised. You know, if you look into our structure, and I think there was a comment even previously to say our structure is top-heavy, we have quite a huge layer of deputy directors. And we have five or four senior managers or departments. And we have just now done and finalized the skills audit report, which was requested by commissioners. Because if you look into the kind of management issues that we are having, it shows very clear that there is huge lack of capacity, you know, around, especially area of management. Management will be from, you know, deputy directors up. And it's always impossible for a HOD or a senior manager to really be able to, you know, do some of these things unless, you know, there's also a skilled person underneath to be able to do, whether it's reporting to National Treasury on a monthly basis and all those things. So we now have a skills audit report that came out last week, which is going to be considered by the current commission, and then we will look into how we then do interventions to ensure that some of these oversight issues, you know, which should be happening on a day-to-day basis in provinces, our work is in provinces, and in three departments is done properly. So that is what I can talk to in terms of that. I think I've answered all questions.
Yes. Hello.
Just as a reminder, let's say, in the Northwest and in the Northern States, there are also traditions for political leaders. In the Northwest and in the Northern States, we do have traditions for leaders. Thank you.
There's a program that you have in London.
That's a follow-up question. Sorry. Thank you. For what you've been explaining to me, I just want to find out from you as a matter of concern. Do you have a recruitment plan in your department? Because that is the only thing we are getting. How do you recruit in terms of unskilled and skilled people? Thank you.
I just want to get clarity. I'm sorry to do this, but I did ask whether people have now all signed performance management contracts, whether the management staff and commissioners have signed performance management contracts in line with the new performance management plan that has been put in place. Thank you. I didn't get an answer.
No, I just want to speak about the issue of bonuses for commissioners. They don't get bonuses. It's only related to staff members, because I know, but they just get, there is a, the president determines, there's a president minutes, and that's we get that. Commissioners are not involved. It's only staff that are awarded bonuses, if ever they are. The debt check as well, where for commissioners, it's a package. You get a package, and it's how you structure it. If you don't want the debt check, you can get 12 requirements done. If you want to sit in check, you start your own package as a commissioner.
tablet, if you say the check and you can do whatever you like, is there any contract which the community are signing? Or is that a matter of why I'm not? At least that's why I'm not.
Can I avoid it? Actually, there is a process in Parliament where there's public nomination. Under public nomination, this committee and the Parliament sets the ad hoc committee to appoint committee. I'm getting to your question. And then the committee recommend to Parliament sits and recommend to the President of appointment. What has been happening in the past is a discussion around Catalan situation. We get a letter from the President. And in that letter, it's clear that we must implement the CGE Act to make sure that there is no, as commissioners, what we are actually appraised about is whether we are actually executing the mandate of in relation to the CGE Act.
I will not allow a dialogue or a caucus. Finish, Chair.
That's what we have in relation to making sure that the commissioners will execute the acts of the mandate has been signed in the CGE Act. So it's up to Parliament. If Parliament feels that because we are accountable to you, we need to have your bosses. If you feel that we need to have contracts, we can point back to you. You know, we can't say that ourselves because it's something that you can discuss with the legislation and so on.
Which means it is actually our discretion what we want to see as parliamentary. Honorable Tanzania, I'll give you the CEO and you are the last.
Yes, we have signed performance contracts. We have been signing performance contracts. Even in the last financial year, we had a performance policy. People had signed performance contracts. However, you know, because it was, we came up with this performance management system, you know, since that other financial year. It had its fixing problems. And we have been refining as we go along. And performance contracts are now being signed. That speaks now also directly to even the new strategic plan and the APP that has been put in place.
Yeah. So no, I just wanted to raise. This thing of bonus and betting check. The way I understand it, with betting check, you divide the same amount of salary. Say your bonus is 100, you divide it by 30. So the come November, you've got an extra salary there, which is betting check. Now what I'm saying is, when you've got performance bonuses, if you sign a performance management contract, and you also do the opt for the sitting check instead of dividing by 12-50, it causes confusion. Why don't you say this is just a question of clarity to make things more practical? Why don't you say those that have signed performance management because they'll get bonus, they don't go into sitting check because they'll use their bonus as sitting check. Because once you've got bonus and sitting check, people just think, hey, money is for takes there. So for those that do performance, why don't you just keep performance bonus as one? And those that don't have performance management system can be the one that do the thing check. Otherwise, if you have the two, hey, it seems like a double barrel income. Thanks, sir.
No, we noted the comment from the honourable member, and it is a useful comment.
I can't hear.
when I look and assess at what the commissioners have done from 2008 up to now, 2008 to 2009, I realize that you had a lot of huge disclaimers, which was really not good. And you came here, we whipped you and whipped you, and you promised that you will implement a turnaround strategy. Now, on 2011-2012, I see there's big improvement as far as the schemes are concerned and the whole administration of the Gender Commission. And I think it is actually qualified by the AGSA Auditor General, who gave you an unqualified report with emphasis. So I can see that the turnaround strategy that you promised that you are going to implement is fairly working. But I would like to say to you the Auditor General has got some emphasis. Look at those emphasis. Look at your strategic plan that you should comply with your EPP and your budget allocation. But on the overall, you are doing very well. On the question that came about the employment of the commissioner and the staggering period of 2 years or less, I would like to say to Honorable Lamula, what the commissioners are doing, we don't remember, Honorable Member, they're doing oversight. And when they come and tell us their challenges, we really have to see as to how we help them. You should not compare them to party, what the party would do. Because in essence, this is a portfolio committee with many parties in it. Us as honorable members, we need to say, yes, they've got challenges. How do we assist them over oversight? So I'm saying they've got a challenge to us, and we all know in our lives that if you have a job, but you don't have a guarantee, we're always worried. And sometimes others can even land in hospital because of depression. But I'm saying, with our government, we have a policy of continuity. So I'm saying, with us as commissioners, we can take upon us and try and see how we assist them so that to make the policy of continuity to become a reality. I think it is our job. You know where we come from them. They were like little babies crawling. And here they are, through our whipping and all that, they are not on their toes. So I would like us to actually look at this as a challenge that we need to help them as one of our oversight mandates. So I would like to say to you in conclusion, I would like to say, look at AG's opinion, look at the committee comments that we had today and the recommendations, and improve more on your strategic plan, aligning with your EPP, aligning with your proposition, and value for money. Thank you. I think that is great that I can say, you are improving. You are no longer in the ICU, one member has to. You are now in the ward. You are no longer in the ICU. You are in the ward now. Thank you. We didn't prepare any food for you. You are the ones who decided to go beyond the scheduled time, so you go back with your ICU.
Thank you. Thank you, sir.
No,
I know it's fine that you covered it. Yes. I was going to say exactly what you said.
Oh.
But I thought that you needed some help.
Yeah. It's just that I wanted to have opening remarks to go back to question.
Maybe I can give you a human rights break. For just 2 seconds, human rights break for 2 seconds. We have a call to adopt human rights. Thank you.